Okay, so Perry Gidalit. So after the last week's sort of disaster with the Nevi'im mess, so you see that Yeravam is a bit more complicated than he makes out to be. Yeravam, first of all, has two sons, Avia and Nadav, which should ring some bells there. Right, he names his sons the same as the sons of Aaron. Right, Nadav and Avihu, or here Nadav and Avia, right? But he basically names his sons the same, which makes sense because he is inaugurating, and in addition to being king, he inaugurates a new religious ritual, and he builds two egels, which is what Aaron does. Right, Aaron is responsible for building of the egel. Yeravam is clearly casting himself as Aaron. Right, that's sort of his religious defense. And that's what you find out in Perek Yudalad. But you also find out that despite his disbelief in the Navi, in Perek Yud Gimel, he doesn't fully have disbelief of true Nevi'im. And he actually has a relationship of sorts, or still believes in, at least at some level, Achia. And Achia was the Navi who had originally given him the kingdom, right? Who told him the original nevuah that you will be king, and ripped up the cloak and gave him the pieces. So in Perek Yud, now it's the fact that he still contacts Achia, first of all, shows that at some level he's a believer. Which, as we already touched on last week, it's not clear whether his agalim are actually meant to be idolatrous or they're just meant to be, different conduits towards God. Because if it was really idolatrous, it's not totally clear why he would be still talking with the Navi of Hashem. Of course, it's possible that the Agalim are just a ruse, right? He doesn't want anyone to go to Shalayim, so the way to do that is to inaugurate idolatry. But he personally believes in Hashem, or he also believes in Hashem as some syncretist belief. It's not totally clear. His son, Aviah, gets sick. So instead of turning to the false Nevi'im, he decides to turn to Achia Shiloni. So he sends. So that's a Perek Yudalad that opens up. Ba'idai chala Avia ben Yeravam. So Avia, the son of Yeravam, gets sick. Vayomri Yeravam liyishto kumina viyishtanit velo yadu ki ad eshet Yeravam v'alacht shilo hine sham Achia Navi'u diber alai lemelech al amazeh. He said, go dress yourself up, disguise yourself, and go to Achia, who was the king, who was the Navi who made me king. And honestly, it sounds like he has some sort of relationship with Achia. It's a tense relationship, but it sounds like he actually has a relationship, which, if you read it that way, would support the suggestion. Alex Israel makes this point, right? He was one of the people who argued that the Perek Yud Gimel showed you that even true Nevi'im weren't totally sure that Yeravam was wrong, because, it wasn't real idolatry, and after all, God appointed him. And it sounds like he kept some relationship with Achia, which might imply that if Achia kept a relationship with him, it's because he's not totally evil, or he's not. But he sends his wife, and he says, disguise yourself, so that Achia won't recognize you. Now, the Mefarshim divide. Why does he tell his wife to disguise herself? So there's two radically different positions that the Mefarshim raise. The Radak talks about it, the Malbim talks about it. One is that he thinks he's going to trick the Navi. Right? That he thinks that by his wife dressing up, she won't know that she is the wife of Yeravam.
What's the point?
Right, so I tend to, some of the Farshim say, look, he just didn't realize the Navi is all-knowing, right? Or whatever, that Hashem would tell the Navi.
But why would he bother if Achia recognizes her?
Because he thinks that if Achia recognizes her, he won't, he wants him to daven for his son, he won't do it. Right, he wants him just to go and say, my son is sick. Not Yeravam's son is sick, my son is sick. Right, that's one opinion of the Mefarshim. Right, he wants Achia to bless the child, like a miracle worker. But he doesn't want Achia to put together that this is his son, because Achia is not going to do it. Yeravam at this point has led Bnei Yisrael astray, so he says, dress up. The other possibility is that he's not trying to trick Achia at all. He doesn't think at all he's going to trick Achia. He thinks he doesn't want anybody else to know that he believes in the Navi. Right? It's for Bnei Yisrael, because his whole kingdom is predicated on the on people not believing in Yerushalayim and the Nevi'e Hashem, like Achia. So he doesn't care whether Achia figures out that his wife, he doesn't want anybody on the way to see that he's still dependent, right? He has all his fake Nevi'im. He doesn't want everybody to see that when push comes to shove it, his son is sick, he doesn't turn to his prophets because he knows his quasi-religion is a farce and goes to Achia. So he's, but as part of this ruse, he says, "V'lakacht v'yadech asar alechem v'nikudim u'bakbuk d'vash u'vatei lavu yagid lach ma'yela na'ar." Go and bring some bread, 10 loaves of bread, and some wafers and some honey, and he'll tell you what the boy is doing. And this was when they went to Nevi'im, they used to bring food, they used to bring presents. But why does he send her with bread, just like basic bread? It's part of the disguise. She doesn't, right? If you send a, she's dressed up as a pauper, and then she brings a royal gift, then everyone will realize that it's Yeravam, or it's a member of Yeravam's court, or they'll, something will be up. So she said, he says, dress up as a pauper and bring a pauper's gift, right? Dress up the part completely and find out what's going to happen to the boy. Vata, and this is, again, this is a theme that you get it. You get it with Elisha later, you get it with Eliyahu. Vatas kein eshet Yeravam. Vatakam vatelech shilo. Vatavo ber achiyah. Vachiyahu lo yachol lirot. Ki kamo einav misivo. And you realize, and this is one of the things I think that supports the Mefarshim who say she dressed up to trick Bnei Yisrael so they wouldn't know she's going, you find out now that Achiyah is blind, right? Or is almost blind, right? He can't see. Which, as Alex Israel points out, this this brings this scene to a very much a Yitzchak moment, right? This is, you know, you have the prophetic personality, the religious personality who's somewhat blind but has the power of bracha in him, and therefore you're turning to him and you need to dress up to deceive him. That's what Yaakov does, right? Yaakov dresses up, and we know in the case of Yaakov, Yitzchak sort of sees through it, right? And he says, Hakol kol Yaakov v'yadayim yezo, right? I can be blind and I sort of see what's going on, but it brings that to mind. But in this case, there is no trick. V'adonai amar el achiyahu, hine eshet Yeravam ba lidrosh davar meimcha, el bina kicholahu kazo v'chazet daber, ra'ila v'hi chavava v'hi mitna keira. So he says, look, the wife of Yeravam is coming because her son is sick, and this is what I want you to tell you, to tell her. So you see that this is the irony of the moment, right? She dresses up for a blind person, and still he has enough vision because it's from God to see through it, right? The irony is meant to jump out at you, right? She's dressed up and he's blind and he still knows because he has true vision, right? Not supervision, but he actually knows what's going on. And it's not only Yitzchak this brings to mind. This also brings to mind Shaul, right? And that's really the story this brings to mind, where Shaul, after the Malchut is torn away from him, at some point, right, he wants to consult with Shmuel, who's the Navi who made him king. But he doesn't have any way of doing it, so he dresses up and goes to the witch. Right, he goes to the witch. And the witch calls Shaul up from the dead, and he thinks... upside down, exactly. And he thinks that, you know, Shaul's going to greet him and be nice to him and have a conversation with him, because after all, he had a relationship with him. He was the person who made him king. And Shaul yells at him, which is about... because... just because I made you king doesn't mean that if you don't deserve to be king, I'm still going to be nice to you. I'm not. So that's what happens here. It's the same model. Achiyah says, "Vehichishmo Achiyah et kol ragla bava fetach vayomer bo yeshet Yeravam." As soon as he hears her feet at the door, he doesn't even have to see. Right, so a third level removed. Right, he's blind. She's disguised, and she hasn't even come in yet. And he calls out, "Ah, Eshet Yeravam, lama ze'ad menake Ravan, uche shaluach elayich kasha." Why are you disguised, or why you bother being disguised? It's not going to help you. I have a harsh message for you. Lechi imri li Yeravam, kol amar Adonai elay Yisrael, yan asher harimo tich, ticha mitoch ha'am, ve'necha nagir al ami Yisrael. Tell Yeravam from God that since I've raised you up from among the people, I've made you ruler over the Jews, Ve'akrada mamlacha mi'beit David, ve'etnalach, and I tore away the kingdom from David, from my servant, because Shlomo, you know, in parentheses, because Shlomo didn't deserve it, right? The clear implication is, wait a second, David deserved it, Shlomo didn't deserve it, so I took away the malchus from Shlomo and his kids. I gave it to you because you deserved it. And now what are you doing? Ve'etnalach, ve'lo hayita kavdi David. But now, you aren't as righteous as David. And he only did the right thing. You can't just say, well, God gave me the kingdom. I gave you the kingdom because David's children weren't as righteous as David, but neither are you. So where do you get off keeping your kingdom? And you've done worse before anybody before you. Now, the obvious question is, who's before him? He's the first king of Yisrael. So there seems to be only one choice.
Shaul.
Well, either Shaul, right, or Shlomo. It says, I took it from Shlomo and gave it to you, but you're worse than Shlomo. Which is true, because Shlomo allowed his wives to worship idols. You...
Do it yourself.
You built... First of all, he built... Right, he allowed his wives to do idols, but there still was Yerushalayim. You set up idols to keep people out of Yerushalayim. Right, it's... And you have made these images to make me angry, and me you've thrown behind your back. Right? You've just ignored me. Now, Chazal love this pasuk. They make all types of drushas on this pasuk. And they right, in Bracha, they say that anyone who eats before davening violates this pasuk because you've thrown God behind your body, right? Behind your gava is how they darshan it, right? That before you talk to God, you go and you eat. But God says, look, it's not fair, right? I took away the kingdom from Shlomo because he was bad, and now you're worse than him, presumably. Lachain. So now, you sometimes see this in Tanakh, that when a Navi is angry, and he wants to make a point, he's crass. And this is like very not, or you wouldn't think of this in like modern, you wouldn't think of this, like a modern rabbi is giving Musar, so he's crass. And but that's what he does, and he says, I'm going to bring evil to your house, and I'm going to kill all the males. Right? But how does he say male? Mashtin bakir. There's anyone who urinates against a wall. Meaning urinates standing up. Right? It's a very crass way of saying males. But his point is, I'm really angry. Right? You don't deserve dignity. Right? He just resorts to this crass language. The Chazal say maybe it means even dogs. Right? Even the dogs will be killed. Right? You know these. But the simple meaning is it means males. Right, atzur v'azuv, it's not totally clear what it means, right? Bond and free, kinsmen and friends, not everybody, but it comes from, right? It comes from the end of Dvarim, right? Efes atzur v'azuv, your balakari, right? Meaning it's invoking the klalot of, I'm trying to remember if this is in Nitzavim, is it in,
yes.
It's in Nitzavim, or is it in Hazinu, or it's one of those. It's in one of those many, many curses at the end, but it's clearly referencing back to it, is that... I think it's actually Hazinu. It's
Let's
see. Oh, sorry, this was Osa Bracha. Okay. Let's see. Let's see. You. Yeah. Okay, it's one of those. It's one of those curses. Where is it? I should Google it. But why would he invoke that? Right, because that's the point. Is you? It's not just. He's not just telling him I'm going to punish you. He's telling you that he's telling Yeravam that it's Dvarim Lamed Bet. So that is Lamed Bet, Lamed Bet. I think that is Hasinu. Dvarim Lamed Bet. Yeah, Hasinu. Right? Ki yadin Adonai amo v'alavadav yitnecham ki yirek yaslat yad v'efes atzur v'azuv v'amar el heim atzur chazay yuvo. In the middle of right, Hazinu, where Hashem says, if you falter, I'll punish you. If not, I'll reward you. He's saying this is part of like this is not a secret. This is biblical. If you go astray, so then think bad things will happen to you. Hamet liyaravam ba'ir yochlu aklavim v'hamet basadeh yochlu ofa shamayim ki Adonai diber. And the dead of the house of Yeravam in the city will be eaten by dogs, and those who die in the field will be eaten by the birds. Right? Again, this very crass, rough imagery. Va'at. And now he turns back to Yeravam's wife. Va'at kumi lechi leveteich bevo raglecha iru meina yelet. Go home, and as soon as you get into the city, your son's going to die. Right, that's the message, right? You know, there is no good news. V'savdu lo kol Yisrael v'kavru oto ki zeh levado yavo l'Yeravam el kever yan nimtza bo davar tov el Adonai Elohei Yisrael b'fei Yeravam. But don't worry, he will be buried and he will get eulogized because he is the only person in the house of Yeravam who has any good in him. That's my solace for you. That's my consolation. And the Midrash suggests, what is it that he did right? So the Midrash suggests that he was one of the guards preventing people from going to Yerushalayim, and he skipped his shift to let people to go to Yerushalayim, right? He was the one who wasn't totally sold on Yeravam's religion. Veikim Adonai lo melech al Yisrael asher yachrid be Yeravam zayom ume gam ata. Said, and I'm going to make it worse. There will still be Malchut Yisrael, but the next king of Malchut Yisrael is going to be the one who kills you. Right, whoever kills you, that is who gets to be the next king. V'ika Adonai Yid Yisrael kasher yanuda ha-kaneh b'mayim v'natashit Yisrael me'al adama tova asot asher natan lavotihem v'zeiram me'ever l'nahar yan asher asu et ashrayhem machisim Adonai. And God will strike it until it sways like a reed in water. He'll uproot Yisrael from the land which he gave their fathers. He'll scatter them beyond the Euphrates because they've provoked the Lord by secret posts they've made for themselves. Right? It's going to be bad. The Gemara, though, picks up on this notion that he compares the Jewish people that'll be like a kaneh, like a reed, and they see in that a mixed bracha. Right? That it's clearly a curse, but he said, but they say in the end of the day that Achia is saying a reed, even if you batter it, it doesn't break. It bends, but it doesn't break. Right? And therefore they say even in Achia's curse, he hit a little bit of a bracha, that there's some solace, that Bnei Israel won't break, as opposed to they compare it to Bilam, right? That when you compare when you compare Bnei Israel to mighty trees, trees do break. So the bracha of Achia, the curse of Achia has a bracha in it, as opposed to, which is better than Bilam. V'yitain et Yisrael beglal chatot Yeravam ashechatav ashechti Yisrael. And God will give over or forsake Bnei Israel because of the sins that Yeravam committed and led Bnei Israel to commit. So v'atakam eshet Yeravam v'telech v'devo tirtzata hi va'abet. So she goes to Tirzah, which you find out later on is a capital city in Yisrael. And as soon as she steps over the threshold of her house, the child dies.
She would have stayed away. Because when she came back, he would die.
Yeah, so that's, you know, what everyone wonders is, like, play the game forever. You know, that was like, I remember once in Yeshiva, you know, you have all these, like, question-answer sessions with Ramim, and there's always the guy who wants to ask the question that's just weird and pointless and whatever. So one of my friends from high school asked all the Ramim, what would you do if you knew you had 6 months left to live? Right? And all the Ramim were, like, rolling their eyes. But Rav Mordechai, who, you know, has a sense of humor, he's like, I know I have 6 months left to live. He's like, yeah, you know you have 6 months left to live. He's like, okay, well, if I'm immortal for the next 6 months, then I'm just going to go into Gaza. I'll find all the terrorists. They can't do anything to me. So that's what I'll do for the end of my life. And I was like, that wasn't the point of the commit, you know? But, you know, that's what you can say, right? He'll die when you get home.
Right. So then if she wouldn't have ever gone home, he would have lived.
Yeah. So, you know, so then there are suggestions that maybe he died already, right? She thought it would only be when she gets to the house, and right, it meant that even once he got into the city, and she only noticed when she got home, and, you know, whatever, she tried to get into the city, not that, whatever.
But it's also interesting that the whole nation is punished because the king was bad.
Yeah, I mean, they go along with it to an extent, right? I mean, they're worshiping these whatever they're doing exactly. But yeah, and he led, they follow. But we'll see that by Rechavam, it's a bit different than that, right? The people are more guilty. It's not just the king. But this is what happens. Ve'ikbru otov, ve'ikbru lo, kol Yisrael, kidvara adonai shir diber bi'adav, do achiyah nafi. So everything that Achiyah said would happen, happened. Ve'yeter divrei Yeravam asher nilcham asher melech, v'asher malach, hinam ketuvim al sefer divrei hayamim l'malchei Yisrael. And everything else that happened in the time of Yeravam is recorded in the divrei hayamim. V'yamim asher malach Yeravam esrim u'shtayim shana, v'yishkav v'motav v'yimloch nadav b'no tachtav. So he reigns for 22 years, and then his son Nadav, and again that's the Nadav and Avihu thing, takes over as king. So that's, you know, that's the end that we hear of Yeravam. But then you find out that things aren't so rosy in Yehuda either. Shocking, really, quite shocking. V'Rechavam ben Shlomo malach b'Yehuda ben 41 shana Rechavam ben Mocho u'shvasre shana malach b'Yerushalayim ha'ir sher bachar Adonai lasum et shmo sham kol shem yiftei Yisrael v'shem imo na'ama ha'monit. So Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, was king in Yehuda. He was 41 when he became king, and he reigned for 17 years in Yerushalayim, which was the city that was chosen by God to put his name there from all the Shvatim, which, again, emphasizes the point that we've talked about before. The reason that Malchut Yehuda succeeds is because they're tied to Yerushalayim. And at the end of the day, that's their advantage, right? That God promised that as long as there's Yerushalayim, there'll be a Malchut Yehuda. But also, they should be not idolaters because they have Yerushalayim, right? Yeravam only introduces the Agalim to keep people out of Yerushalayim, but if you have Yerushalayim, you should at least be worshiping God, but that doesn't happen. Vayas Yehuda hara b'nei Adonai ve'kanu oto mikol asher asu avotam b'chatatam asher chatau. So they also make everybody angry, right? They make God angry. Right, so they make Ashrayim now. Right, this is bad. Right, they have Yerushalayim and they're making Asherah, and they seem, and this is, you know, a subtle point. Gam Hema, right, who's also, it sounds like Gam Hema, meaning they follow Malchut Yisrael, which first of all indicates that Malchut Yisrael and Malchut Yehuda aren't as split as you think they are, right? Because clearly there is enough interaction that the idolatrous religion spills over from one kingdom into the other. So even though they're pretty split at this point, it's clearly not absolute. It's not a good thing, but it's a reality.
It's like Ireland, but it's split.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a confederacy, which doesn't really get along, but... Or that's what it could have been. Or that's the Midrash. The Midrash said it really could have been a confederacy, right? That God says to... The Midrash says, God says to Yeravam, why don't you go to Yerushalayim? And he says, well, if I go to Yerushalayim, right, what is going to happen? He said, you, me, and Ben David will walk together. He said, okay, but who's going to go first? And Hashem says, Ben David. He said, okay, then I'm out, right? And he builds the Agalim. But what Chazal are telling you is that it could have been a confederacy. It could have been that there'd be two kings, but they'd still be centered in Yerushalayim. But Yeravam didn't want that, because then he would clearly be the second-tier king, because he's not the one with Yerushalayim, right? You can't be the king without the capital. You're just second-rate. And that's really what drives him away. But still, even though it makes no sense for Malchut Yehuda, who has Yerushalayim, they do it. Though, here... As I mentioned, it seems very much, as opposed to by Yeravam, Yeravam leads and the people follow. Here it sounds like the people lead and Rechavam follows. Right? Because it doesn't say Rechavam does it. I mean, it says the people do it, right? The people follow. It's a populist thing, right? Presumably there isn't so much interaction between Rechavam and Yeravam themselves, but there is, the people are, there's enough interaction that they're adopting populist idolatry. Vayivnu gam himalem bamod. Sorry, did that one. Vigam kadesh hayav aretz asu kachalvo tayvod hagoyim asher risha the name of Bnei Israel. And then it gets worse. They have kadesh, right? Kadesh are male prostitutes, probably religious prostitutes. Right? It's bad, right? It's bad, right? They have idolatry and religious prostitution. So what happens? Vayhi b'shana chamishit l'melech Rechavam, ala Shishak melech Mitzrayim al Yerushalayim. So Shishak marches against Yerushalayim. And this is, it brings everything full circle, because Shlomo's downfall had been his alliance with Mitzrayim. That's what he thought would bring him to power. Shishak, Mitzrayim had harbored Yeravam. And now, not only does he harbor Yeravam, but now he actively comes and fights against the Jewish people. There is discussion in the Mefarshim that it could be that Shishak had actually conspired with Yeravam to fight, and then Yeravam never actually carries through. So Shishak does it by himself, but Shishak marches against Yerushalayim. Vayikachet etzrot beit Adonai ve'etzrot beit HaMelech ve'kol lakach. Vayikachet kol menginei hazav asher zasa Shlomo. And he storms it. He takes the treasuries of the Beis HaMikdash and of the palace, and he takes the gold shields that Shlomo had, which, as we mentioned, weren't really use, right? Didn't have a use. They were on honor guard because Shlomo had peace. So he made gold shields just because he could. And the irony that Mitzrayim, which was his ticket to peace, comes and they're not prepared, right? He comes and takes the gold shields, which are meant to be useless because you're supposed to have peace and you won't need them, and he takes them away and he takes them to Mitzrayim. And what in return, Vayasa Melech Rechavam Tachtam Meginei Nechoshet. So Rechavam replaces them with bronze,
copper,
bronze, v'ifkid et yad zaretzim ha'shomrim petach beit ha'melech. And he gives them to the officers who guard the entrance. But whenever the king would go out, they would bring them and put it in the armory. So the irony that Shlomo just had this honor guard gold just lying around because there's so much gold, right? And as the psukim said by Shlomo, right, kesef was worthless. Gold was, silver was nothing. Gold they had so much of. Now you've moved two steps down to bronze, to copper, and that's all they have, so they need to keep it in the treasury when it's not being used, right? The contrast for Rechavam and Shlomo is so striking. And whatever else Rechavam did is written in Divrei Hayamim. They fought Chavam and Ravam their whole life. His mother's name was Naama Amonit, which is stressed multiple times. What?
Just said this.
Right, so the Mefarshim pick up on the fact that there may be an indictment, right? The reason Rechavam is like this is because, his mother was Amonit, right? She's not Jewish, right? Like, Shlomo married foreign wives, all his wives, the whole culture was Avodah Zarah. What do you expect from the guy? And then he has this son, Aviyam. Now, this is one of those many stories. This story of Rechavam, which takes, five, six psukim here, which is expanded on in Divrei Hayamim. In Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek, Perek Yud Bet. Right, so we hear this story again, but it's much more. Right, it's much more expansive. Perek Yud Bet of Divrei Hayamim tells you that Vayhi Kachin Machut Rechavam Ukecheskato Azav Et Arad Anai V'Kol Yisrael Imo. When the kingship of Rechavam was firmly established, he grew strong. He abandoned the Torah and all of Yisrael with him. But there's no Avodah Zarah. He just abandons the Torah. Vayhi B'Shana Chamishit L'Melech Rechavam Ala Shishak Melech Tzram Yerushalayim Ki Malu Ba'Adonai. So Rechavam, in the fifth year of his kingdom, Shishak marches against him because they rebelled against God. Be'elef matayim rechav u'shim elef parashim ve'imispar l'am asher ba'u imo mitzrayim luvim sukiyim v'chushim. He brings 1,200 chariots, 60,000 horsemen with all his troops from Mitzrayim and the surroundings. Ve'kod erea mitzirot asher li'udav evo ad Yerushalayim. And he comes on the fortified towns of Yehuda. V'shmaya navi bal rechavam v'sarei Yehuda shenasul Yerushalayim v'nei Shishak v'yom alem kom ra'adonai atem azavtem oti v'af ani azavti etchem b'yad Shishak. So Shmaya comes to Rechavam and says, because you left God, I'm leaving. God said, I'm leaving you. So Rechavam and the officers say, oh, God is right. Right, God is right. Okay, that's it. And when Hashem sees that they humble themselves, He says, I won't destroy them completely, and I won't let them take Yerushalayim. They'll be servants to Him, but they'll be servants to me, and they'll know the difference between servants of me and servants of the kingdoms of the earth. So He comes and He takes the treasuries and the golden shields, and He makes the copper shields and gives it to His officers. But when He humbles Himself, but God didn't destroy Him. Right? And this is one of a million examples of when Divrei Hayamim and Malachim tell what seems to be two different stories entirely. But the truth is, when you think about it, they're not two different stories. They're two ways of telling the same story, but it depends on your focus, right? Both of them say that Rechavam was bad, and Shishak challenged him, but he remained king in Yerushalayim. But in Malachim, it's presented as he worshipped Avodah Zarah, and therefore he was punished, and Shishak, right, conquered him and made him a servant. In Divrei Hayamim, it says he was going to totally destroy him because of his sins. He did some tshuva, so he didn't destroy him, and he was left with Yerushalayim. And right, it's the same net result, but in one of them, it says he was rewarded for not totally sinning, and in Malachim, it says he was punished for sinning. And the sin seems to be different, right? Meaning, it's not clear he didn't do Avodah Zarah in Divrei Hayamim, because in Divrei Hayamim it says he left God, which is bad, but doesn't include Avodah Zarah. The real sin seems to be arrogance, because as soon as he humbles himself, God forgives him partially. In Malachim, the sin is Avodah Zarah.
But again, it's not him.
But on the other hand, you're right. In Malachim, the people are accused of Avodah Zarah, not Rechavam. And here, Rechavam is accused of arrogance. So you can work the two stories together, but the question still becomes, as always in Divrei Hayamim, why do you have two different folk? Right? Because in the end of the day, it's two very different focuses, even if the stories historically work together. And this is, you know, the basic thesis that everybody in the last, you know, 100 years, basically. No one really learned Divrei Hayamim for a very long time, but the last, like, not even 150 years, everyone loves Divrei Hayamim because they like the notion of historiography. Right, that the study of history isn't just facts, but it's the story you're trying to tell. Different facts become important. When I took a course on Divrei Hayamim in university, we started off with an article by Edward, I think, Carr, who's a historiographer, historian, where he said, you know, what counts as history is not objective. Right? You might think it is, but it's not. And he doesn't mean because of interpretation of facts. He said very simply, if I ask you, is what the King of England eats for breakfast part of history? You'd say probably not. But if you're a food historian, right, then obviously that's the only thing that matters, and what wars were going on is irrelevant. It just depends on the story you're telling. So Malachim, the sin in Malachim that the Navi is polemicizing against over and over again is Avodah Zarah. And therefore, if the people are doing Avodah Zarah, that's front and center. Throughout Divrei Hayamim, the sin is arrogance, right? Consistently. Arrogance is the greatest sin, right? So they focus on Rechavam, who's arrogant, as opposed to Avodah Zarah, which is the sin of the people. Also, they're written many hundreds of years apart. Malachim is written right after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So the point of the book
Yirmiyahu.
Yirmiyahu is writing it at the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. His goal in the book is to explain why was it that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And therefore, he needs to tell the story of the failure of Malchut Yehuda. And this main failure of Malchut Yehuda is the Avodah Zarah that was in it. So what does he focus on? He focuses on Avodah Zarah, and he focuses on the failures of Malchut Yehuda. That's the tale that he's focusing on, because he's explaining to people, how did we get from Shlomo HaMelech to the destruction of Beit HaMikdash? this framing of Malachim is Shlomo becoming king and the Beit HaMikdash being destroyed at the end of Malachim. That's what he needs to explain, is how do we get from point A to point B? To that end, this is an important story. Divrei Yamim is written in the time of the rebuilding, in the time of going back. So now all that stuff is in the distant past. Now what the Navi needs to do is to remind people of their former glory and explain to them how we, right, rebuild, how we have confidence, how, what it means to, right, to be an Oved Hashem. From his perspective, the main sin is, for different reasons, is arrogance, right, is that people need to learn to, right, accept what God said. They're going back, but it's not the same. It's not the same, right? It's less wealthy, right? It's not as beautiful. It's under foreign auspices, right? Because God humbled them and sent them into Galus. And now they just need to know that the main thing you need to know is be humble and accept God, right? That's the sin that needs to be brought front and center. And the goal isn't to explain why Malchut Yehuda failed. The goal is to explain to them why Malchut Yehuda is still the heir to the eventual rebuilding. He needs to ground that. So you need to shift it, meaning Rechavam may have been a middle character. We know that from Malachim, right? Meaning, yes, in Malachim, this parakeet sounds terrible because there's Avodah Zarah going on, but it never says he worships Avodah Zarah. And we know that when Yeravam went to war with him, the Navi told him, look, don't go to war with Yeravam, and he just stops. He's clearly someone with a certain level of, as you find here, a certain level of humility, that as much as he doesn't like what's going on, when God tells him something explicitly, he says, okay, God's right. I don't deserve to be king, right? Overall, he does that in Malachim too. But in Divrei Hayamim, where you're trying to justify, why is it that despite the fact that Malchut Yehuda and Malchut Yisrael sin, Malchut Yehuda is still the eventual heirs to the messianic rebuilding, or the rebuilding of the second Beit HaMikdash even, you want to emphasize that Malchut Yehuda is not that bad. So you play up the good, meaning it's true, he was bad and he was good. We know that. But in Malachim, you're emphasizing why he was bad. So you say he was destroyed. In Divrei Yamim, you say, yeah, but he wasn't destroyed totally because he wasn't totally bad, because you're emphasizing the good. It's two different perspectives on the exact same story, depending on the narrative you're trying to tell people. So you get this, you know, and this is just one of those many examples where Divrei Yamim and Malachim, to tell different stories, tell it just from a different perspective. They're not, right, contradictory, but they are emphasizing different points. Yeah. So that is, and remember, both Yeravam and Rechavam, the Psukim, say that there's more to the story. Look at the Chronicles, right? And when Divrei Yamim is being, you know, written down, they have at their disposal Malachim and all these books, Divrei Hayamim. There are other stories, just, right? It's not like Malachim tells you this is the whole story. It says this is the relevant part of the story, and there are other details which for our purposes aren't relevant, and they're in that other book called Divrei Hayamim, right? And in Divrei Hayamim, when they're actually writing based on all these chronicles, so they pull out the details that might have been secondary in the time of Malachim, but now they are primary in the time of the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. So, I mean, look, you go through Malachim, it happens time and time again, but this is sort of a short, easy example just to highlight the difference between Zoom books. Okay, but that brings us to the end of Yeravam and Rechavam, and Tetvav then continues with the next generation. Okay.